This week's Parsha, Parsha Shlach, focuses majorly on the Meraglim, on the spies that are sent out to look at Eretz Yisrael. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but it doesn't have the happiest of endings. After the word comes down that there's going to be a 40-year delay until they actually go into Israel, it's like your typical spirit flight. At that point, the end of the parsha focuses on mitzvos that are directly related to going into Israel. And most Mefarshim point out that this is not coincidental, that at this point, the people obviously get very depressed, right? 40-year delay, we're never going to get there. So therefore, the Torah says, no, yeah, absolutely, you're going to go, the Jewish people are going to get to Israel, and therefore we're going to start discussing it right now. These are the rules you have to know. Among the mitzvahs that we discuss is the mitzvah of hafrashas challah, that when a person bakes a certain amount, they have to take off a certain percentage of the dough and give it to the Kohen as one of the 24 matnos kahuna, one of the 24 gifts that the Kohen is entitled to. So if you look at number one, these are the relevant verses from this week's Parsha. Vayidaber Adonai el Moshe le'mor, darber b'nei Yisrael v'amarta lehem b'vachem el ha'aretz asher ani mevi etzem shama. So Hashem says to Moshe, when you get into the land that you're getting into, again, emphasizing the idea is we're going in. This is just a delay, but it's going to happen. When you eat from the bread of the land, you have to take a certain donation, a truma, and give it to Hashem. Reishis ariso sechem chala tarima trumich ketrumas goring kain tarimu ata. The first part of the dough should be chala, and that should be given over the same way that you give over a truma when you grow things in the field. May reishis ariso sechem titnu ladonoi truma gedoro sechem. And this rule will apply for always, that whenever you bake a bread, a certain part of it is going to have to go over. In recent years, this mitzvah has had a great comeback. That all of a sudden, instead of just being something that your bubby did in the kitchen, we are now having get-togethers with women all together, have challah bakes, and they all learn the halachas of this. Is there any logic behind it? Is there any reason why challah has become such a popular mitzvah? So there are some indications of two things.
I just want to know why they don't keep giving it to the Kohanim.
I want to know how come we don't have any quality Kohanim anymore.
Next time I do the bracha, I may have to...
Well, let's see if we can video that for the people in internet land.
But speaking of Alan, why doesn't Meryl just give the challah right to her husband? He's a poet.
I do.
That's one answer.
First she burns it. Like the rest of the meal.
At least we won't have to spend that money on the 51st Kiddush.
You won't have another
Kiddush. All right. That was nice while it lasted.
Yeah. I'm just going to be listening to this recording.
So the idea of let's try to refocus ourselves if we can for just a moment. The idea that there is some special import to the mitzvah of challah, that is indicated somewhat in a pasuk in Yechezkel. If you look at Yechezkel, still available for the Siyum, I think, it says Reishis kol bikurei kol v'chol trumas v'chol trumaseichem l'kohen yia reishis yia, that all the truma should be given to the kohen, v'reishis ariso seichem, and the first part of your dough or the batch of dough, titnu l'kohen, you should give that to Kohen. Why? L'haniach bracha el beisecha. If you give over this, you will be blessed your house. Meaning that a person who gives over challah is given a blessed house, which seems to indicate money. So there's a certain value that this is one of the mitzvahs where we say is matan zchor b'tzidon. It's not just if I do this mitzvah at some point, la'achar mei v'esrim, at some point I will get paid back. But no, in this world, you're going to get paid back for this, that there is actually a guarantee of a blessing. Now, in general, this who should be obligated in challah? Probably men and women alike. Right? It's not a mitzvah saseh she'azman grama. But the question is, okay, yes, women, but why not men? Why is this become such a women's mitzvah? Michael Schwartz is not here, but I assume in his family it was a man's mitzvah for a long time, right? As his family owned a bakery. The idea that there is somehow a connection between challah and women, though, is indicated in a few places. One is in Bamei Madlikim. We say this, we'll be saying it tomorrow night again. It says, there are three mitzvahs that if a woman's not careful with, it can lead to a very dangerous childbirth. So there are three specific women's mitzvahs, and they are Nida, Chala, v'hadlakas haner. At the halachas of Nida, that's obviously a woman's related mitzvah. And also then there is Chala, the giving of the Chala, and lighting Shabbos candles. Why are these particularly female? So the Yerushalmi actually discusses it and says as follows. Why Chala? Why did Chala become something that was a particularly women's mitzvah? So the Yerushalmi says as follows. Adam Rishon Chala Tahora. Adam HaRishon was a pure Chala. What does that mean? So, if you look at the Mefarshim, what?
What do you have on top? Happy seeds or sesame seeds?
We love all challahs here.
Right? We don't discriminate. Yet.
Right, right. This is a safe challah zone. So the Mefarshim point out that how is challah made? You mix dough and water. How was Adam HaRishon made?
Brown
and water. Mean that basically is the same recipe to make man and to make challah. So it said that man was somehow representative of the original challah. Because man was made again, this mixture of the dirt of the earth and water. And it's Chava's fault that he died. So therefore, she owes us one here. Right, lefichach masu mitzvah challah leisha. That's the reason why it was that. And in fact, we see that throughout. The Rashi famously points out by Sarah that after Sarah dies, Avraham is lost, Yitzhak is lost, until Yitzhak gets married. So they say when Yitzhak gets married, he brings Rivka, his wife, into the tent, and the three brachas come back. What are the three brachas that came back? So it says, the first one is Ner Dolk Me Erev Shabbos Le Erev Shabbos. There was a candle that remained on all week. Next, right, that being Ner. And next one is Bracha Metzuya Be'isa. Right? That again, the challah became blessed again. That Rivka had taken over. Very interesting. This is really generally not my speed. But if you look at the Sefer HaLikutim, which is a Kabbalistic work, it talks about reincarnation. So it says that the following four people shared the same neshama. They were reincarnations of one another. And they were Sarah, Chana, Shunamis, and Tsarfis. Kulam hayu Gilgal Chava. Why is that? So he says, Sarah imena tikna kol ha-gimel mitzvahs. That Sarah brought back to us, she was in fact the one who introduced these three important mitzvahs of challah, nida, and hadlaka saner. In fact, they point out, based on this, that is where the name Chana comes from. Because Chana is Rashi Tevos of Chala Nida Hadraka Saner. Right? So in fact, they point out that this is the source of it. That Sara Chana, that in fact, the mitzvah of Chala was something that was very attached to them. And therefore, to this day, it has remained one of the mitzvah that's been more of a female mitzvah, even though men are as obligated in challah as women are. There's no difference whatsoever. there is the Shulchan Aruch. We actually did it in Halacha yesterday. The Ramah comments that there is a tradition to bake challah on Erev Shabbos. Says Nogim Walosh Kadeshir Chala Babayas Rasos Mehem Rechamin Rusalahim B'Shabbos V'Yontif. It says that in fact there is a tradition that women at home would bake challah for Shabbos. V'Neim Yekala Shabbos V'Yontif. This is something that is part of the preparations for Shabbos. V'Ein Rashanos, and the person they should not stop doing it. So what's the reason why specifically on Shabbos do we bake the challah? So there are two reasons given by the Mishnah Berurah. They're actually both originally from the Magen Avraham. He says one reason is because that there are many people who have a tradition that in general there's something called Bishul Akum. In the event that there is food and all the ingredients are kosher, and I know the pots were kosher, etc., if it is cooked by a non-Jew, a Jew cannot eat it. Just merely based on the fact that it was wholly made by non-Jews. There may or may not be an exception when it comes to bread. According to the minhag of the Ashkenazim, if bread was baked by non-Jews, if we know that it's kosher, you're still allowed to eat it. Svaradim do not allow. Right, right, because Ashkenazim hold the pas. Svaradim don't hold the pas palter.
What is it?
It's called pas palter. A palter is a baker. So bread that was baked by the baker, anything that was made for sale, even if it was done by a non-Jew, when it comes to bread, not to other food, you're allowed to eat it.
And how Sfardim hold?
The Sfardim hold that bread is no different than any other food, and therefore they cannot do it. Even Ashkenazim, though, it's very interesting, because according to these simple rules, the Sfardim are right. Because there is a machlokes both in the Gemara Bavli and the Yerushalmi whether this rule applies or not. At the end of the day, the Bavli says that it does not apply, meaning that there is no difference, like the Sfardim say. But the Yerushalmi follows what the Ashkenazim say. In general, if there's a difference, there's a disagreement between Ashkenazim, between Bavli and Yerushalmi, we follow the Bavli, right? So therefore, according to all logic, the Sfardim are right. For whatever reason, the minhag in Ashkenaz is not that way. However, there are certain times where the Ashkenazim follow, notably the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. Right? During the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, even Ashkenazim try to avoid Pas Palter. And also, the Mishnah Berurah says on Shabbos and Yom Tov. On Shabbos and Yom Tov, we specifically try to have bread that was baked by Jews. And therefore, he said the minhag developed that even though they would buy from the bakery, even the non-Jewish bakery during the week, when it came to Erev Shabbos, that's why the tradition came that women bake their own challahs. That's where it comes from. That's reason number one.
You still need the hetter of pas palter if a Jew turns on the
oven? No. Again, that's I shouldn't have said that so quickly. That's again a machokas Ashkenazim and Sfardim. There's a concept of shaleach kisum. In the event that a Jew and a non-Jew cook together. So that you're allowed to eat, as long as there's some Jewish involvement. How much involvement does it have to be? So if he puts in some salt, that's clearly good. If he stirs the pot, that's good. Ashkenazim go even a step further. And they say if you take a wood chip and you throw it into the fire, that's enough. That's even though you haven't done anything to the food itself, right? That is enough. Right, and based on that, in the event, let's say we have here in the old ovens, we have a pilot light. So assuming that a Jew lit the pilot light, even if a non-Jew goes and turns on the range and does all the cooking for Ashkenazim, that's the same as throwing in a wood chip. We were involved in it, that's good enough. Sfardim don't hold of that. So again, for an Ashkenazi, let's say during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, so in the event that a Jew turned on the pilot light, that's good enough. For Sfardim, that doesn't help either. Because they don't hold of this idea of Shaleach Kisum. So the Mishnah Berurah here says that the reason that the tradition of baking challahs on Fridays came from the fact that you needed kosher bread when it came for Shabbos. The second reason is related to what we said earlier. They said the reason that, yes?
Is it assumed the men are not home, so they can't make the challah? That's why the women do it?
Or they're not talented?
That's a possibility.
Or
if they're equally obligated, why not?
Well, again, so I think
Thursday night.
I think if he came on a Tuesday night, particularly in those days, the women did the cooking.
Right.
right? So therefore, on Friday, the women still did the cooking, right? I think that's probably the real reason for it. The second reason is as we said, this idea of challah is related to the fact that Adam HaRishon didn't get to live to forever. When, what day of the week did that happen? What? No, that he ate from the Eitz Hadas. That was a Friday, correct. That was a Friday, and therefore the tradition is developed to bake challahs on Friday because of that. That's the second reason given by the Mishnah Berurah. Very interesting, if you look at the Mishnah Berurah's other commentary. What?
I'm just saying a lot of women don't turn on Friday. Do other things on Friday, right?
I happened to be at someone's house last night who was baking challahs. But Thursday challah.
Okay. Wednesday.
Yes, Wednesday night. Wednesday night's Thursday.
I wasn't there.
Very interesting. So how serious is this minhag of women baking challahs? So the Mishnah Berurah actually is pretty serious. So he said... ube avanoseinu harabim. Those are fighting words. Hayom itchilu ezu nashim lahashbis haminagahu lerochenes min haofeh. There are women who actually go to the bakery and buy challahs on Friday. The Rav Shapir Avdi. This is not good. Not good. This is what's wrong with this. It's the millennials, I'm telling you. You're maktinim bezek covered Shabbos.
That was one of the questions they asked.
Yes. out of curiosity, you asked every girl you went out with this question.
That's probably why it took so long. Yeah,
that's one possibility. Yes. I guess that could have been it. Okay, so this is the idea. Now let's get to the actual halachas of Hafrashas Challah. The first question is, what do you take challah on? So famous, the first Mishnah in Challah, the Mishnahs in Challah, by the way, happen to be, the whole Challah is only four prakim long. It happens to be a very, very rich Masechta Mishnahs. There is a story, which is, I think, even true, that at one point Rav Soloveitchik was ill, and his doctor told him he couldn't give Gemara Shir. So therefore, that semester he did Mishnahs Challah. He gave Shir on Mishnahs, and they have it written up. The Rav Soloveitchik Shirim on Mishnahs Challah. And Rabbi Shalta said that was the only siyum they ever made in all the years, because four prak of Mishnayos he was able to do in a semester, and then the Rebbetzin baked cookies and they had soda. He said, That's right. So the first mission is a very interesting one. It's a very important one. He says that what grains do you have to take it on? So these are the five grains: chamesh dvarim chayim b'challah, hachitim v'asarim, hakusman shibola shul v'shipun. So these are the five grains that if you bake from them, you have to take challah. What are they? Well, chitim is an easy one. Eretz, chita, use'ora. Right? Those two are the easy ones. That's from the Chumash. And they are? Wheat and barley. Then it gets a little tricky. What are kusmin, shibola, shul, and shipon?
Kusmin, isn't that spelt?
Spelt, right? Right? Shibola, shul in modern Hebrew is oats, right? And shipon is rye. So therefore, if you use any of those grains, these are the five grains that... The problem is that there was a fellow in the Hebrew U, Professor Felix. That was actually his last name, right? Yehuda Felix. What? Right.
He writes in
church. Correct. I happen to have that book also, even though Rabbi Unger thinks he's the only one who has it. Just saying. I got it out of Seamus once. The don't tell him. No, I wasn't here. And so he actually did a study. The idea, he said, what's the difference between these grains and other grains? So this grain is bali de chimutz. It ferments, it rises, as opposed to the other types of grains. Even if there's a chemical reaction, it's only bali de sirchon. So the Gemara says that orez is rice. We know that from the Spanish arroz, right? That rice, if you take rice flour and you add water to it, that's going to have a chemical reaction. but these will have more of a chemical reaction. He did studies, and he pointed out that it's true that wheat and barley have greater chemical reactions than rice, but the other three don't. And in fact, you cannot make bread out of any of the other three grains. You'll ask, what about rye bread? You ever hear that?
Well, you make it with wheat.
Yeah.
Right. It's like cornbread. You don't make it out of rye. Potato rolls aren't made out of potatoes, and rye bread isn't made out of rye.
Don't they have spelt bread, though?
What?
Spelt.
Well, right. But the rye, it doesn't have enough gluten in it in order to make it rye.
So you really can't make challah out of
rye. You couldn't make...
Right. So according to Professor Felix, he in fact found three other grains that replaced these three. So what? So for example, winter wheat and spring wheat, he said, are two radically different grains, and they're both counted. For example, right? We call them both wheat, but again, when we talk about chita is only one of them. That's an example of... According to him, they were misidentifications. Now, according to him, therefore, on your Cheerios, you would make a...
No.
What?
No,
the opposite.
They're made of oats.
Oats.
But Felix says no.
No, because if you tell me that that shibola shul is not oats, then this is not one of the... That's not one of the five. Shahak or maybe Adama, right?
So what are
you can eat it on Pesach.
Oats.
You can eat it on Pesach.
So according to this, right. Now, of course, now that also means, if you tell me that he's right...
Then you can't have oat matzah.
You can't have oat matzah on Pesach, correct. You can't make hamotzi on oat matzah. Right? What? For example, correct, according to that.
But so typical oat bread, the typical rye bread, you could make so many cauliflower bread because it's mainly wheat.
That is correct. Right. Again, well, rye bread, he mentioned rye bread. All rye bread is overwhelmingly made out of wheat. Right. Right.
Seeds of rye.
Old grain, whatever they make that.
What?
Rye bread is all rye.
All rye, yeah. Sounds like a hockey puck. Yeah. even Ezekiel wouldn't eat that. So the identification of these is of course exceedingly important. Later studies showed, I believe, Professor Felix to be wrong. So in fact, I think Rabbi Schechter went and changed his bracha back and forth on his Cheerios. Over this. And at one point, he would only eat his Cheerios if he had, it was part of a well-balanced breakfast with toast. Right? That's one way of getting, that's what makes it a well-balanced breakfast. No questions about what bracha to make. Right? So again, this is very important. Right? So we assume when it comes, again, this is, when the Chamishas Mine Dogon, the five types of grains, we assume that what they taught you in school is probably right. That it probably is oats and spelt and rye together with the wheat and the barley, right? So it's brought up here in Chal, of course, as we've seen, when it comes to matzah, when it comes to brachas, it has a much broader, now, of course, with the issue of many people being celiac and worrying about gluten,
so
right?
You need to take Chal from those that is gluten-free? No.
Yes. Again, if it's made out of one of these, one would assume yes. Right, but what? Now again, most. Let's be clear: the overwhelming majority of gluten-free bread is made out of rice and tapioca. Right, that is shahakol, and you would not do that. We've had this problem several times. We go to someone's house for Shabbos, and out of the goodness of their heart, they went and for lecha mishnah, they bring out gluten-free bread. Right, and I've got to say, you wouldn't happen to have some matzah, would you? Because the people are exceedingly well-meaning, but in fact this becomes, but this is an issue. It's like the equivalent of saying, "No, you're gluten-free. Here's two apples for Lacha Mishnah." Yes, those are gluten-free. Thank you. That was thoughtful. But of course we. But you wouldn't happen to have some sliders lying around, would you? Which would be a much better option. So that is the first issue of what type of. The first issue of what type of grain we are talking about, what type of flour. The next issue, which is an important issue, is who's baking it. The Mishnah later on in Chas says, Ovi kolchavim shenasam liyisrael lasos lo isa patur min achala. In the event that the bakery is owned by a non-Jew, even though he sells it to a Jew, you don't have to take challah. And the flip side is if it's a Jewish-owned bakery and the workers are not Jewish, you're still chayiv in challah. Now,
you mean,
of course...
You mean yes. If you buy the dough from the bakery or if you take challah from the finished challah?
Meaning, you have a bakery, right? Let's say one of the local
bagel stores.
Rosenberg's is owned by a non-Jew, right? So that's the case. They don't have to take challah. When I buy it, I don't take challah. If I buy my challah from them, right? There's no reason to take challah from them.
But if I own a bakery,
assuming you're Jewish.
Assuming I'm Jewish.
Yes.
And I need to take challah.
Correct.
Even if you have non-Jewish workers.
Correct. Even if they... So again, this...
So wait.
What?
And when it was the bagel store before Rosenberg...
Right.
Do you ever take...
Right, so I...
Collar?
What?
Do
so yes?
You take from the dough, okay. And you have a big challah, you just take part of the challah?
Right, we'll discuss that. Yes, you can.
But if it's owned by a non-Jew and
what?
Jewish workers, it's all about the owner. It doesn't matter who's making
all about, it. Right. Does not matter who's making it. So in fact, it, oftentimes in you go to a kosher pizza store, right? Right. What?
We're dissolving down here.
Okay. So if you have a pizza store, right, and the guy who's flipping the dough, right, is not Jewish, but it's owned by Jews, so somebody's got to take challah, and ain't the guy flipping the dough, by the way, right? He can't be doing it. So either Mashkiach comes in and does it, or the owner does it, right? One of the pizza stores on our block used to be owned by an Israeli. And he used to get up and you'd be seeing that he'd yell out the bracha and hafreshes challah, right? Which we'll discuss what the bracha exactly is, right? Because that he had to do it, even though he wasn't making the thing. It was owned by it. It has to be done. Corporations becomes a big issue here, right? If you buy Entenmann's cookies, if you buy...
anything from King Supers, I would
say. Right? Yeah, anything from King Supers, right? Who owns King Supers? Who is the king?
Kroger.
Who owns Kroger?
He's
some
Jewish guy.
Always some Jew.
The
shareholders, correct.
Oh, it's publicly traded?
It is public.
It's a publicly traded company. Its stock is listed on the New York Stock Exchange.
That is correct.
So lots of people own it then.
So lots of people own it. Right? So again, so that... Right, as I point out, if you take all the Jews that own stock in Kroger's, and then you add the Jews who own mutual funds who own stock in Kroger's, then you have Jews that are part of pension funds that own stock in Kroger's, it ends up that Jews own 172% of Kroger's. Just saying. So
college taken?
Right, so that's a question. You have to figure out what is the status of that, of whether or not the king, whether when the Vod goes in to give its hashkacha on the bakery here of King Supers, whether they take challah. I would think not.
I can't imagine every single day he's running in to take challah.
What?
Bread and cooked stuff is being made daily.
Again, so how often does the Mashiach come in?
Probably not every day.
I don't know. Again.
So they wouldn't take.
Right, so I think they... What?
I can't imagine they're going in every single day to check every single location. It's probably one of those nifas.
Well, again, there's only one kosher bakery under King Supreme.
Two.
Two.
No. Three.
Do I hear four? Five. Five. Six.
Plus the plant.
Not seven.
The plant.
Eight.
So wait a minute, how could it be?
Each King Supers has its own actual bakery. and bake some local things. If you go out in the suburbs and you look at the baked goods in King Supers, and I've done this, there are no hashkachos, and
correct,
they're not kosher. Okay.
So the ones from the plant.
Yeah, but so if we buy bread at King Supers, we have to take from it?
No.
Right. So again, that's a good question. That's what we were discussing. Okay, thank you. So,
if you go out, you happen to be in the far suburbs of Denver.
You're out in Parker.
Yeah. Something like that.
Off of Mississippi, there's a big King Supers out there.
Right. Okay. That's a good example because this is absolutely true. You will not find a hashgacha on the bread. And if you read Cherry and Leedsdale or Monaco and Leedsdale.
Jeff, you do find it not in the bakery, but in the Kroger bread.
The Kroger
bread from the plant.
This is fascinating, but it's not really relevant. Now they've left total control of this class.
Is that one relevant?
Don't call it if it's not kosher.
And they don't get those pastries.
Right. So again, as we were saying, it depends on ownership, right? We generally assume when it comes to a corporation is not considered Jewish. It's not considered Jewish, it's not considered non-Jewish, and therefore, when it comes from a corporation, assuming it's not a closely held corporation, that'd be one thing, but a large corporation like Kroger's, where there's nobody who really owns a controlling share of it, in that case, it is not considered Jewish, and as such, challah does not have to be taken. They're also trying.
That's owned by Cerebus. That's owned by.
Aren't they also publicly traded?
No.
The Machokas here.
Albertson, the guy
called Albertson. What? Again, but I'm pretty sure that they don't have kosher baked goods, so it doesn't really matter. That's again, I don't know. But again, the assumption is that this is important. If I buy something with a hashgacha, they took care of this for me.
Yeah.
Right. That is the assumption. We'll see. There are times when that assumption does not apply. But for now, we're gonna have that assumption. Yes.
Is challah equal to just regular bread, or is challah only?
Challah is not just regular bread, but it's any baked good. If you're making chocolate chip cookies, you also have to take challah. Right? The fact that we call challah is a Yiddishism.
Yeah, it has to be a lot of chocolate chip cookies.
Challah for Shabbos.
What?
A lot of cookies.
But C is for cookie, and it's good enough for me. just for the record. Okay. Now this is important. Dr. Horowitz. So how much? That's the next topic, right? How much do you have to make to do it? So the a lot. That is exactly correct. Okay, so we can just skip to the next one now. once we got that under our belt, the Shulchan Aruch quotes again. This comes out of the Chumash. That there is a minimal amount of dough that has to be made in order to be chayv and challah. How much is that? So it's asiris ha'efa. It's a tenth of an efa. Oh. How much is a tenth of an efa? Well, there are 432 eggs in an efa. So therefore, a tenth of an efa is the volume of 43.2 eggs. Right? That wasn't that hard. Right, so the question is, well, what does that translate into?
Well, point of clarification, you're talking about volume.
Volume, that is correct.
Typical
egg. Of the incredible egg, right? We don't the incredible edible egg. Yes. So, what? So that is a question. So the Shulchan Aruch in number 12 actually says it. It says it's 520 dram. So what does that translate?
Is it just a typo? It was supposed to be gram.
No. Again, so this is the minimum amount for taking challah is 520 dram. D-R-A-M.
They didn't mean gram.
No, they meant dram. Right? Even though gram has walked out an insult there. With that D. Dram. What? So again, 520 dram is what it is according to that. What does that translate into?
520 cc, it's a reasonable
What? So again, what does that translate to? So we'll take a look at Maran Rav Avadya Yosef, gives what his opinion is of this. There's a lot, there is a definite range. When it comes to volume in particular, there is an issue. We've discussed this many times before, that there has been discussion over the years, notably from the Noda B'Yehuda, as to what is the volume. The Noda B'Yehuda came up with the idea that eggs used to be bigger than they are today. In fact, they used to be twice the size of what they are today. What?
It was proven wrong by this.
So again, Rabbi Sabalovsky told me that he's absolutely correct, because if he said, if you ever look at the Flintstones, the eggs are so big. And that proves him right.
The whole McCall for the guys.
Right. Right. So again, when you can't figure out how big an egg is, you can't figure out how big 43.2 of them are. Very interesting, by the way, the Shach has an interesting comment. He says that this idea of the 43.2 is alluded to actually in the word challah. The word challah is gematria of 43, and it ends with a hey, which is, it indicates, and a fifth. That's the shach. What does this translate into? So if you look at Maran Rav Avadya Yosef in Yechav Adas, he says that it's 520 dram. Very good. Shehu elef sheish meos shishim v'sheish gram v'chetzi. 1,666 and a half gram. 1 2/3 kilo.
Google says 1.92 liters.
Okay.
Because you're changing right. It to weight.
Right. So again,
volume.
Correct. Right. So again, you've got to take it and translate it into
it's
weight.
Assuming the specific gravity.
Right, but this is flour.
Yeah, we're not dealing with water. But dealing
this
with
is
flour.
Flour. This is flour, though. So, right. So that's where Ravaj says 1 2/3. 1 2/3 would be 3.3 pounds, right? According to that, he said that is the minimum amount. He said the meat is chasidus. He said that's what that you do if you want to be machmir. A half is chal below bracha b'shir elaf sheish meos v'chamesh esrei gram v'shlish. Not much of a difference. That's what he says. 1.615 instead of 1.666. Not a radical difference there. That is the opinion of Rav Avadya Yosef. The minhag in America is different. The minhag in America has always been that you're mafish on 3 pounds of flour, and you actually make a bracha on 5 pounds of flour, which comes out to 18 cups of flour, which according to, which is a lot of challahs, what it comes down to, right? That's even more cookies. Right, very rubbish.
Right.
How much?
14 cups. Yeah, that's about 14.
And how many challahs do you get out of that?
Depends on how big your challahs are. Six?
Average six or seven.
I'm not hearing that. I can't hear the discussion.
Good. So that worked out well. I've been working so hard on this.
Which
is six large challahs.
Okay, but here's my question.
Large ish challahs.
When you're talking about the flour, when you're making the challah, it's not just flour. It's got eggs. It's got stuff in it. So we're talking about that mixture, not the amount. Right. Of flour.
Well, again, I care about the amount of flour.
Yeah.
I care about the flour and it. I care about, yes,
yeah.
Only the flour. Yeah. And if you're going to add chocolate chips to it, and therefore I'm going to get more challahs out of it, so be it. But that doesn't make a difference.
So there's three
shares. So again, so under 3 pounds of flour, you're not mafresh. You don't do anything with it. 3 to 5, you're mafresh without a bracha. 5, you're mafresh with a bracha.
I thought the dividing line was for 4 or 5 pounds. That when you made like about 5 pounds, you were good. Like about 5 pounds.
What does it mean to be good?
Well, like you can make a bracha on that.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, but
good.
But it might be a little bit less than 5 pounds.
Like, well, it's really, according to the Chazon, it's really 4.95 pounds.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, so we'll discuss how much we mafish.
Yes.
Absolutely it is.
2.3 kilos.
Correct. It's significantly larger. It's an Eretz Yisrael. So at least among the Sfarim, they follow this. Here in America, we don't make a bracha until the Chazon Ish year, which is just about 5 pounds.
So, if you're going to talk about this, I won't ask the question.
Yes, yes, yes. Inquiring minds want to know.
Yes.
Now, this is important. Yes. You have a question? You should ask.
My question is, if you use bread machine, and you use, like, I don't know, 1.5 pounds of challah, and you just keep using the machine, you know, to get... How does that work? Is each batch considered...
So again, your bread machine is making dough, or it's making challahs?
Making dough.
Okay, and so you're going to make multiple batches of dough, and then you're going to braid it and make the challah out of that?
No, as each one comes out of the bread machine, I braid it and then I refill the bread machine, and in the meantime, I'm baking the other challahs.
You never reach the shear.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a very similar question. So that it gets a little tricky. In the event that you obviously collected the dough, and then you made it all in one shot,
right.
Then obviously it counts, right? In the event that you would go and bake the challah, right, then give two to Merrill, then bake them and give two to Agi, etc., then for sure not. But if you did go and wrap them all together, right, bag them all for yourself to use, that is a machlokes, and in that case we would be nafresh, probably without a bracha.
Okay.
Now, there is a major issue about, so nowadays we said that if I had to pick a mitzvah that challah is most similar to, and really, really similar, that would be truma, right? It is. It's, we grow it, we give some, etc. Truma, do we do that in Chutz Laretz?
No.
Do we do it in Eretz Yisrael, Midaraisa nowadays?
No.
So what's the status of challah? What's going on with it? Why is it any different? Right? Maybe we shouldn't be, outside of Eretz Yisrael, perhaps we shouldn't do it at all. Now, if you remember, challah, look at the pasuk, it clearly indicates, right, the first source, that it's one of the mitzvahs of Tluyas Baretz. So why are we doing challah in Denver? And Denver is a great deal of kedusha. Don't get me wrong, but for the mitzvah tluyas baretz, you know, it might all be legal, but you don't have to take a truma on it, as far as we know.
Practice.
So, what? So let's discuss that. So the first thing is, if you look at the Gemara in Ksubas, we find that it's not only is it darabanan outside of Israel; it's darabanan in Israel as well. There is a special rule. The Gemara and Ksubas tell us, even if Truma would be Daraisa Chala, nowadays only Darabanan. Why? Because the Pasuk says, Bavo Achem El Haaretz. When you enter the land of Israel, so when did that begin? When the first Meraglim came in, they came into Israel? What does it mean to come into Israel?
Settle.
When everybody is in Israel, then it's when it's Doraisa. So the Ritva says, not everybody, everybody. The mitzvah of Challah is Doraisa only at the point when the majority of the Jews in the world live in Israel.
So we're pretty close.
Close, but no cigar, right, at this point. Very close, but nowadays, even in Eretz Yisrael, Challah is only Darabanan. That's point number one. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. If you look at number 17, the Shulchan Aruch says, Ein chayavim b'challah min haTorah, ela b'Eretz Yisrael levad. A, it's only in Israel. As it says, Shinev ha'i ba'alchachem elechem ha'aretz, u'bizman shekol Yisrael sham. And now does it have to be that in Israel, but you have to be in Israel with the majority of the Jews. Shinev b'vo'achem, b'yas kolchem v'loz b'yos miksaz, v'fichach. Even in the time of Ezra, even in the time when there was a Beis HaMikdash, Chal was only Derabbanan. Next halacha, Ma'afrishin Chal b'chutz laaretz midivrei sofrim, k'dei shelo tishkach Toras Charis Yisrael. We're just doing it now. In chutz laaretz, it's even lower than that. In chutz laaretz, we just do it for the sake of memories. That we should know that there is such a mitzvah out there. So the concept of chalos chutz la'aretz is a lo derabbanan, and we'll see that there's a difference between the derabbanans. Yes.
Two questions. One is that would be like chadash where you have like tzveika, so on things like stores, you could say it's a suffix when that chutz la'aretz.
If it's a suffix. If
the other thing is you're saying it's derabbanan and it's something like chutz la'aretz, how would we make a brach on it?
We make derabbanan. I make brachos on my Hanukkah candles.
Yeah, the derabbanan.
That's the Rabbanan, and I'm on Megillah.
Yeah,
I make it.
I mean,
I make a bracha rishona when I
yeah,
have potato kugel.
Those are things that we know that we do chutz la'aretz.
So again, we do this chutz la'aretz also. It's a low level the Rabbanan, but we do it. Right now, you'll find out why it's a big deal. It's a big deal for the following reason. This is very important. In general, it is most preferable to take your challah while it's still in dough form. Right? In the event that you did not take it when it was in dough form, then you could take it in bread form. What happens in the following case? Right? We sit down Friday night to eat, and my wife tells me, the challahs I baked yesterday, I didn't realize I baked 73 of them because I gave it out to everybody in the neighborhood, right? I made 17 with poppy seeds and 22 with sesame, and then there were 38 seedless. I forgot to take challah. So is it treif?
No.
Yeah, actually, it is treif. It's worse than treif, actually, because if it would be daraisa, I'd be chayiv misa b'dei shemayim. I better to eat chazit than to eat that.
You just said it's a low form.
So again, so it's the rabbanon. So it's treif mid the rabbanon just. It's like eating chicken and milk. No, not so bad.
But you can just take it.
But here's the story. So on Shabbos, you can't take it. Right? On Shabbos, you're not allowed to take challah. But the Gemara in Beitza tells us we're in luck. Why are we in luck? In Chutz La'aretz, so look at it says, Amar Shmuel, Chalos Chutz La'aretz, Ochal V'Holef Achar Kach Mafrish. I can eat it first, and then I can leave over a slice, and after Shabbos, I can say, by the way, that was challah.
Whoa.
Except for all the people you gave it to.
No, that counts for the whole batch. That covers it. That covers the whole batch. That will be fine if that does. That only works in Chutz La'aretz. In Israel, you can't do it. In Israel, you can't eat it. If your wife, your husband, whoever forgot to take challah, right? In Eretz Yisrael, you can't eat it on Shabbos. But now, this happens to be one of the interesting questions. What if this happens, right? And I got good news and bad news. The good news is you're in Chutz La'aretz. The bad news, it's Erev Pesach Shechol Yos B'Shabbos. Right.
Where are you in trouble?
So there's been plenty of ink spilled on that very odd case. If on the one hand you can eat it because you're mafish v'olip, but on the other hand you can't save it till afterwards because it's going to be Pesach. What?
But when?
I'm going to flush it and then I'm going to be mafish in the toilet.
You say Saturday night starts Pesach.
I have to save it till after Shabbos, but I can't save it till after Shabbos. What? Sell us the guy, buy it back afterwards, and then.
Can
I
give it to my dog?
Rico.
What?
Give it to my dog.
No, you can get rid of it, but you have to have it to be mafresh.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? So even if Chatul downs it right there and then, still, what I'm left with is some radioactive feces, and I won't be able to do it. So again, this is an important difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. Now, it's interesting because we said that it's not just challah, it's all bread. And not only is it all bread, it's all baked goods. There is a question, though, where do you draw the line? In general, what's... What?
Can I tell you all a funny story?
Why not? Go for it.
I'm catering a Friday night.
Okay.
Okay. Colorado Springs left me in charge of the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. What could possibly go wrong?
Okay. About 10 minutes till candle lighting. Canopy. How much flour was in the flourless chocolate cake? None. How much flour was in the flourless chocolate cake? Did you take challah? It didn't take challah because there is no flour in the flour. And this went round.
Who would have said that there's no flour in the flour?
Yeah, he's talking to you about this. I haven't lit candles. I've done this. Like, people are waiting. None. No flour. I knew I had to take
So this should be beyond the line of taking home.
But there was no flour in the flour.
Right.
Because it was eggs and chocolate.
I understand. Right. So the question is it's not everything that has flour you have to take challah on. So let's say I'm making a large cholent and I put flour in it to thicken it.
Oh, no.
That doesn't count.
Right? 5 pounds of flour to thicken it.
Why would you do a thing like that?
You know.
You're a Jewish cook aboard the USS Lexington.
I work for Tzahal. I work for Tzahal. They have children in the Israeli army. What? 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 Kishka. Right? So the question is, what is the... So the Torah talks about what is it that makes a chayav challah? So there are two possibilities. One possibility is the dough. Is it a thick dough or is it a watery dough? Is it like a Danish dough or is it like a sponge cake dough? Right? A sponge cake dough is liquidy until it bakes, as opposed to a Danish, right? That's a solid dough. Or is it a matter of baking versus something else, like boiling, right? When we would come to...
Do you make bagels?
So again, you bake them after you boil them. But bagels, pretzels, etc. We have fried dough, right? Right? Cookie dough ice cream?
No,
where you just weigh. So, right? What? Right, but it's a thick dough.
Whey is a byproduct.
No.
No way. No way.
Curds and whey.
You can't make an argument that something which isn't cooked is somehow baked.
What? No, the question is
cookies
it foam?
Cookies dough is not even... Cookies dough is not cooked.
It
doesn't matter.
But it's dough.
It's eat.
You give on your challah before it's cooked.
Right.
At what point are we just taking liquor and saying there was too much wheat used in this week? We
too much is never enough. Right. So again, the question is as follows: when it comes to, let's say, a sponge cake, do you a cupcake, right, or the like, right? Do you have to take challah on that? That's a machlokes. It ends up that the OU is mekel, I believe. Last there is the OU does not take challah when it gives ashkach, for example, in Entenmann's. Even though there are many strong opinions which say you should. Based on that, Rabbi Schechter makes the following. So let's say I buy one of those tins of an Entenmann's cake.
Use again, by the way, the tin.
Just everybody's a posek. You put the woman on the kashrus committee and that's it.
That's a different year.
That's
I'm still mad about it. I hear you.
Still farbissen. So if you buy yourself a devil's food cake with the marshmallow topping on it, they don't take challah on it based on the fact that it, even though it's baked, it is not a thick dough. Rabbi Schechter recommends before you throw out the pan, you should say hareza challah, because there's always some stuff on the bottom. And therefore, since this is chutz la'aretz, you have a right to first be eat it and then be mafresh afterwards. So he says that you can just to be safe, you can just say raise the challah and throw it in the garbage, and you're okay.
But that's like going into it with that idea, you know, that the example of Friday night was when it was a mistake.
That's fine. You can go into it. Yeah, absolutely.
How, in this case, it's somewhat a mistake also. How are you supposed to take it if you haven't made it from the start?
Yeah,
well, gosh. You can take it
and still they give hashgachas on milk. Strange, isn't it?
Well, I thought cake you took.
What?
I don't know that about all.
Yes, again, what? Meaning what? So again, I think a lot of kashrus organizations, being that the taking challah happens to be very difficult to do in a factory setting.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, you have a huge factory out in the middle of nowhere, so therefore, because of the difficulties, right, a lot of the kashrus organizations are make on this case. But it's easy to be machmir just before you throw the thing out. Say, harei zachala, and you don't. Right, there's no downside. You're not making a bracha on it. What? Entenmann's makes Danish stuff too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do.
They make all sorts of pastries.
Yeah, they make stuff with
So, yeah, it could be the mafresh on that. That I don't know.
So if what you're saying is true, I know that there are people who have various customs. Like they save every single piece of challah that they make over the year, and like they burn it before Pesach. Dude. It's part of the burning of the chametz, which is not my custom, but I've seen it done.
Moldy.
Yeah,
I think that's how they invented the penicillin.
No, how soon do you have to destroy the challah?
Again, they're not doing this to be mafia. There's no rule you have to destroy the challah. Again, I assume these people, the challah that they bought, they were mafresh challah before they baked it. They did it a normal way.
Right. But I'm telling you, there are Hasidic people who like save every piece of challah they've separated.
But not because of this. They do it. They do it for. They
you
do
mean
it,
after
right.
they separate?
They gather the crumbs.
Right.
Then you also have to scrape the entomans cake into your pile that you're going to burn at Pesach. Is that your question?
No, I think Jeff is saying that they save when they take challah instead of burning it and disposing of it.
I don't think that's what Jeff is saying, but thankfully Jeff's alive. We could ask him. Are you saying that?
I'm saying that because they save every little ball of dough that they've taken as challah from the year.
Kind of a gut. He was saying
it. I told you. I'm a good listener.
That makes one of us.
They take mifaresh challah every week. They take challah, they save it till they burn the chametz at Pesach, and they burn 52 weeks worth of
that sounds. Course. I mean, it sounds odd, because in general, so why do we burn the... So what should we do with the challah? Really, the challah should go to the Kohen, as someone was chirping about earlier. So the... nowadays... If you look at the next source says how much you're supposed to take for challah. So it says that in general, when an individual bakes bread, they're supposed to take 1/24 for challah, a little bit over 4%. However, if the person is doing that in a commercial setting, they only have to take 1/48, 2%, which is a significant amount. We don't take either of those amounts. We take a de minimis amount of the challah. Why do we do that? Because it's not going to the Kohen, right? Nowadays, the Kohanim, we're not convinced that the Kohanim are Kohanim. And even if they are Kohanim, the odds are they're not Tohar, and therefore they cannot eat it. So since it's going to end up in the trash, anyhow, we burn it. Now, therefore, if this was true Truma d'Oraisa, you'd have to be very careful with it. Because if a person accidentally would eat the challah, that's misa midei shemayim, which we try to avoid when we can. This is why people like Merrill, for example, are very careful when they burn their stuff to wrap it up, because it's treif. So if you cooked it in your oven, you'd for treif the whole oven. So therefore, people put it in the foil beforehand to make sure that it doesn't get... Other people are even more careful, and they're not going to put it in the oven. They'll make a fire someplace else.
You don't even have to bake it then.
No, you don't have to bake it. You wrap it up and you throw it out.
Oh, you don't have to bake it?
Now, why do people burn it? Right? You don't have to bake it.
Because if you're going to give it to the Kohen, it should be cooked.
Well, maybe the Kohen doesn't like your recipe. Maybe the Kohen makes his own recipe.
Just give the dough to the Kohen.
That's right.
Any type of dough you like.
That's right.
So why do we burn it?
So therefore, right, the reason is, right, that in case the reason people burn it is because we don't want it lying around. We don't want someone to accidentally eat it, right? We're burning it to be safe, that no one that this is something that has intrinsic holiness in it. That's why it would be odd to save it for a year.
Flush it down the toilet like Yitzhak said.
Well, again, that's no, you can't flush it down the toilet like Yitzhak said, because A, you didn't say it. But again, it has a certain level of Kedusha, right? So therefore, it should be treated with respect. Flushing down the toilet is not the respect. No, yes, you put it in a separate bag and you put it aside.
Wait, you put it in the garbage once you've wrapped it up.
Right.
I don't understand how wrapping it up and putting it in the garbage is more respectful.
Because it's not mixing with the dirty diapers. Right? It's not fraternizing with the dirty diapers. What?
Otherwise, it would
fraternize. Right. Now, of course, nowadays, it's not quite as serious, because Midoraisa, even Eretz Yisrael, this isn't challah. Right? If a person would go out and eat this, right, they wouldn't be chayiv misa bidei shamayim, because it's not really matnos kohen. Right? So therefore, that's not... So again, but that's... That's another difference nowadays, being that it's not the Oraisa, the concern is not as great. the last issue is what bracha do you make if you make a bracha? So if you look at the Shulchan Aruch says the bracha is the bracha tar shalom akim v'chem arshek yishem tzom tzivanu rahafish truma. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says.
That's not what we
say. The Ramah says, nah. Said, oh, rahafish chala.
Good.
Right? The Taz says, or some people say, rahafish truma chala. He said, but other people say, the bracha that we generally hear, rahafish chala min ha'isa, which is a fourth possibility. That is the most popular bracha to make. The Taz says he does not understand where that came from.
What does that suffix mean?
Min ha'isa, take it from the dough. To take it. Right, the Taz himself writes that he has no idea where that minna came from. It's neither of the opinions in the Shulchan Aruch, but somehow he points out. He said, and he doesn't understand it, but that is the popular opinion. That's what I think most women or men do. And make a bracha. What do you make?
Just the challah.
The hafer challah. Hafer challah. Mm-hmm. You know your wife makes the hafer challah, not minna isa. Right, so again, in the pizza store, they always made a rafish chalam in Isa. Yes? Yeah, so it was a machokas.
I mean, it's one of the forbidden time where I
But again, they're different minhagim developed. Now again, Rabbeinu Tam and Rashi is a little odder because they're really close to each other, both geographically and chronologically, yeah. Right? So that's familiarly, right? that's another part related point, right? So that's probably a better question where that came from. You know, when Rabbeinu Tam's grandfather bought him his tefillin for his bar mitzvah, you know, what do you?
Turn to me, you said grandfather.
These are broken. I want a different hashgacha, right? So that's the story. Okay, so these are the mitzvah of hafarshal schava. It's a very popular mitzvah nowadays for whatever reason, and it appears in this week's parsha. So this is the overview of it.
So good. The idea that you know that it's an auspicious time.